wanted to just comment on a few things, but I think I will return my comment because I got many of us will be in the meeting, and I would want to comment maybe to the repair, to the repair that is called the repair.
Converted.
I don't want to talk to the converted news, but I really wanted to say this is the platform where we do our work. And we do our work as a community and a team, irrespective of our political parties. Of course, we come from political parties, but this is the area where we can be objective and do our work and aim to achieve something so that, for instance, if tomorrow we are told that Mayflower police station is one of the best police stations in the country, we have every right as a committee to pat our shoulders, all of us, and say we contributed to us. And this is what we have achieved since we intervened in that police station. I think committee meetings, interventions, work gives us that opportunity. And of course we then go to the house of politics and there nobody can stop us. We have every right to politics there, yes, right. But the fact is I wish we could remember that. And maybe that when somebody speaks, and probably should make it easy for the chairperson, we give everybody a chance to speak and we listen, so that everybody who speaks knows that I will be listened to. I will not be interrupted. And if I disagree with what another member has said, I do that with some respect. It doesn't matter whether he is my comrade or he is my colleague or he is what, but I do that with some respect, because I think we are most of the time in committee meetings, and if we come to committee meetings being not sure whether we will be ridiculed or whatever, it creates some tension. I'm saying that, and I'm saying I wish we were all here as I make these comments so that we hear. If you are given any responsibility, like chairing a portfolio committee, you have a picture or you have a vision on what you want to see happening in the work that is given to you. One of the things that I have in mind is that we have a committee that can work together as a committee, that can hold the department accountable objectively, that can actually say, this is what we think as a committee must happen. Then we go to the house, we politic. Go wherever where we can politic. Because I think as a committee, we also have a responsibility to ensure that this country is safe. It is also our obligation, and it is our responsibility to ensure that this country is safe. So it's not just something that happens somewhere, but it starts here with us. And that's what I just wanted to say. Respect, I just really wanted to say that. I just wanted to say that. And to make that just those few comments. And I'm saying I wish we were all in this meeting today, so that when I make this comment, because this is a committee meeting, there isn't a department and so on, who are able to hear this message. We'll be meeting the department next week. And I think we have to hold the department accountable. We have to prepare ourselves thoroughly so that we indeed make the department to account and nothing else. This is what we are here for, and this is what we are paid for. This is what the Constitution expects us to do. This is what the rules of Parliament expect us to do. And we will have to do that in the manner that when we close the meeting, we say we have done our work, and we've done it properly, and we've done it objectively. But I just wanted to say that, and thank you for being here on Friday. I know some of the women will want to attend the Women's International Conference those who want to go there will go after the meeting. We'll try to ensure that we close on time, so that if we want to join that conference, we can join that conference. And we are all invited. There will be a gala dinner in the evening. And it's for women. It's not like men are discriminated against. But they have been oppressing us for a long time.
There comes it now.
We want to be all by ourselves and talk about you. Thank you very much. We will request our researcher to present his work on this year's
But Chairperson, to your statement, we want to congratulate you the way you handle it. It doesn't matter how we responded as different members, but the way you respond to us as members of this board of committee, it's a different atmosphere and it's a different tune. And therefore, what your words. Your friendly words or your statement goes a long way, and we have to say thank to you that we really appreciate the way you handle, you try to handle us as not just kids and so on, but you try to do your best, because sometimes we think that we know better than anybody else, but the way you handle it is better. Thank you very much for that.
In short, you are a star.
Thank you for that.
Sure, he's a star.
Moving on, and I think you've enough compliments, and I've already complimented you quite enough to have to bother again. But if I could ask, when we go through this, it's only just sinking into me the import of the way things are now working, as of now, that we as a committee actually have the right not to have an impact on the budget. And, you know, we have sat in this committee, and I can't tell you how insulting it was for them to come to us months after they'd gone to the Caribbean, for example, $30 million, a huge amount of money, to go off and sit at the Cricket World Cup. And then they come to us months later and say, oh, please just okay this. Well, I think between us, I think the explosion could have been heard in Pietermaritzburg from here. And at last we can do that. I think that idea of, I think it was Annalisa's idea, that a limit be put, because they're working with such a huge budget. What is the percentage you can transfer? 8%? 8%. You know, 8% of a gazillion is still a gazillion. I mean, a huge amount. And to the Treasury, I think, took that idea on board, that they set the limit at 8% or a certain figure, whichever is the lower, that they may transfer willy-nilly. Otherwise, they literally can take out of visible policing enormous amounts to use for whatever. And next thing we find, they've gone to Geneva for a holiday, or this one's gone here. And we have no control. So I'm very keen to do this process. And I understand the import of our position now on the budget and the fact that we now have far greater control and that they have to explain to us where the money is going, I think is going to be, it puts a burden on our shoulders. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments. Indeed, we will be doing that in the near future. Like we indicated, there will be procedures that we'll have to follow. There will be reports that will have to be submitted, and so on and so forth. But indeed, we'll be impacting as a committee on the whole project processing and the history that's going to happen. But let me now first request that when BC presents his work, he starts by apologizing for distributing the documents only today in the meeting. We tried our best to get the document yesterday. We couldn't, and the other day we could not. So I think his starting point, the point of departure, will be to apologize, and we'll accept his apology depending on how he motivates that apology. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning, Chairperson, morning members of Parliament, and ladies and gentlemen. Football Friday. Let me start by apologizing for issuing out the document very late. But obviously, we all know that we don't have luxury of time, and the program has been very strict and tight. And so my deadline that I've been working towards is the 5th of March, which is today, believing that members will have time to look at the documents and the presentation over the weekend in preparation for next week's meeting with the department. I understand that the documents were meant to be distributed before the sitting, so that members will also have ample time in preparation for engagement with this particular meeting, but time constraints, yeah. But anyway, fortunately, everything is done, all is ready, and members will have hopefully a meaningful and fruitful engagement with the department next week. Before I begin, there's this separate piece of paper which I've issued out. It looks like this. We will come to this as we proceed with the presentation, and I'll explain the reason why I handed it separately from the presentation itself. Right, let's begin. We look at the legislative mandate, which you all know, and the policy documents governing the department, Section 405 of the Constitution, SAPS Act, National Conservation Strategy, National Crime Combating, the White Paper of 1998. Whether some of these documents, except for the Constitution and the SAPS Act, are still relevant is another issue for another discussion at some other stage. But in my understanding, they still are relevant and they still inform policy of the department. But whether they need to be updated in accordance with what is happening currently, that will be something for another discussion. The guiding documents for this particular year going forward are the long-term strategic plan of the department spanning from 2010 to 2014. The current financial year marks the end of the 2005-2010 strategic plan, which some of its priorities are still captured in the current strategic plan, and I'll explain further on that when it comes to the point about the priorities that were there in the previous strategic plan still moving forward in this current parliament. The annual performance plan of the department 2010-11, as well as the estimate of the national expenditure. That big, thick red book, which talks about the budget. The strategic priorities, one, the main one, is to ensure the reduction of contact crime levels, including the trio crimes. The trio crimes, as we know them, are robbery, business robbery, and carjacking. House robbery, business robbery, and carjacking. As well as reducing the crimes against women and children, and ensuring ensuring effectiveness and integration of the criminal justice system, fighting corruption, and managing crime perception. This continue as shown on the slide that the department seeks to ensure effectiveness and integration of water management, securing the integrity of the identity and status of citizens, and ensuring the creation of information and communication technology system and the development of an integrated cybercrime approach, and most of all, improve basic service delivery by the CPS. The areas of emphasis is reducing true crime, and this will be done by increasing the detection rate of this crime from 13.8% to 34%. It's still low, but if we can reach 34%, there will be a marvelous improvement, to say the least. Even though it's below 50%, but the rate at which the trio crimes are being detected and the conviction thereof is very low. And these are the crimes that right now are responsible for the havoc that is going on in townships and in residential areas, in communities. And addressing them effectively would go a long way in shaping people's perception about safety and for safety in the country. So if we can reach that target of 34%, we would have moved. And also, one of the areas of emphasis is reducing all serious crime categories, including high conduct crimes and trio crimes. We will remember that in the previous years, the emphasis has been on reducing high conduct crimes. And not so much was said about the trio crimes, but now the trio crimes, as I've explained, if we can address them effectively, we will go a long way. But also, the challenge of the conduct crimes is still there. And another area of emphasis is increasing conduct crime detection rate from 52.5% to 57.5%. Other documents also say this detection rate should be within the range of 48% and 60%, which is more or less the same thing, but hopefully, and in fact, we don't want to see regress, we want to see progress. Therefore, the achievement of the target will always aim for the highest target. The primary activities of the department will be to develop specialized units to fight trail crime, particularly, and apprehend known criminals, remove access to guns, and add a financial forensic capacity to the BPCI. Point two on this slide, which says apprehend known criminals, may seem suspect when you try to interrogate it as to what does it actually mean to apprehend known criminals. Aren't we apprehending known criminals currently? Well, we have this one question that the department will have to, the committee will have to pose to the department as to why the primary activity towards reducing crime will focus around apprehending non-criminals, as if previously non-criminals were not being arrested or apprehended. And why turn this into a primary activity, as if it's not been happening, because it's the mandate of the department to apprehend the non-criminals, and therefore to use it as the primary strategy? I'm not sure, but the committee will have to raise the issue on this, unless there is something that we that's behind the meaning. Now, we begin the budget analysis. But before we go into analyzing the figures, or maybe I'll just talk on the figures, then afterwards I'll go back to the points that I said I will explain at a later stage. If we look at the department's total budget, it's 52.5 billion compared to what it was last year at 47.6 billion. The increase 34 3.4%. You can see that at the administration got 7.7% in real terms. By real terms, the nominal terms, as you can see, the nominal percentage change, or nominal percent change, the real percent change. The nominal as opposed to the real change. It's very simple to understand. We're not going to go into the deep financial analysis, but if you have 10 bucks today, or if you had 10 bucks last year, and you were able to buy milk or a liter of milk and bread, as a result of inflation, you may not be able to use the 10 bucks today in the current financial year to buy those two commodities, meaning you will have to have one. Therefore, the value of that money that you had, that budget of 10 bucks, is somewhat lower. So in order to ensure that you get what you need, you have to have an addition to what has been given to you. So if it's been 10 bucks, to cater for inflation, maybe we'll have to have 2 rand to make it a 12 rand. So the comparison between what you're getting this year and last year will be, in real terms, in nominal terms, 2 rand. But still, that 12 rand will still get you the two commodities that you to get bigger. So by having a 10 bar, a 2 rand extra, does not mean you have to, you're going to get more commodities. You still have what you used to have. In real terms, that's the increase. And as you can see on visible policing, there's a slight decrease of negative 1.7%, which is there to maintain or sustain the baseline. And now we come to the point where we unpack all this and see what it means. The total percentage increase is 3.7% in real terms compared to the previous real percent increase of 6.12 or 6.12. Perhaps as a result of the economic downturn that we all experienced, we can attribute this rather modest increase to that to the recession that we've had. As you can see, the total budget did increase, but it didn't increase as much as it did in the previous financial year. However, we still had an increase of 3.4%. And as I've indicated earlier, all programs did receive a positive real increase, except for program visible policy, which received a negative 0.17%. And that's not alarming, because the amount of money that goes into the program will make sure that it stays at the baseline and it doesn't go down. And I will explain now what that means. Well, I've been making an analysis that the priorities of the department have not changed drastically from what they were in the previous 5 years. Simply because we still have the problem of crime, and we have not come to a point where we can say we've surmounted the problem. However, there's been a shift in the level of emphasis put to those existing priorities. And the budget that we have supports that analysis, because the emphasis now has shifted slightly towards the detection of crime, as opposed to the previous focus on visible policing, increasing the number of police, having crime prevention operations, which are still important and they're still going to continue. But those did not have the desired effect on reducing crime. Now, the strategy, hence the emphasis on the detection of crime, is to reduce the trio crime, by the certain danger of death. And to do that specifically, the department has said it's going to have specialized units focusing particularly on trio crime and also enhance the investigative capacity of the detective program and other sub programs within it so that they can fight specifically these problem areas which have been identified, which are particularly the trio crime. So the strategy for fighting trio crime is somewhat different to what has been used before in fighting the so-called high conduct crime. Is it still clear?
Say it one more time.
Is it still clear?
Oh. Repeat.
What I'm trying to say is the emphasis now, whilst the priorities still remain largely the same, the emphasis has been slightly shifted towards the detection of crime as opposed to the previous emphasis which was on visible policing.
Yeah.
Visible policing is still going to continue and it's still the department's priority. However, more emphasis now going forward is on the detection of these rampant crimes which are true. Of course, it will also involve the investigation of other crimes generally, but the focus now is on this so that we can bring down this kind of crime. Right. If we look at the slide over there, it talks about administration of the program one, and you can see that the minister, or the allocation going to the minister, a sub-program minister, has gone down by 0.7% in real terms.
Crime is mortality.
And I also added there at the bottom the total where you see the percentage in brackets indicates the previous percentage. It could be a decrease or it could be an increase, but the ones that you see in brackets are from the previous financial year, 2009-10. So it's a comparison. If you look at the bottom row, the total 14.2% nominal term this year compared to the previous increase of 11.2%. And in real terms, it's 7.0% increase this year. Last year it was 5.89%. So we can see that administration, despite the overall decrease in the budget or the modest increase compared to the previous one, this program has had more increase compared to what it had previously.
For clarity, I just want to be reminded, please, this does not include salaries of the police admin. The salaries are with a different program. That's what they said to us last time.
Yes.
Just want to make sure, because I mean, so that if we argue this point, that we know where salaries are.
Chairperson, through you. Indeed, salaries are within program. But overall, I made a calculation of the overall budget, and it shows that about 70% of the, 70%. Of the department's budget goes to salary, and then the rest, yada yada yada. Now we come to this point where, because administration is very important, but there are certain things that are going on in administration which are rather perplexing. So Honorable, go ahead, please. Honorable, too much.
No, he doesn't have.
You all have. You all have. Yeah, I didn't want to include this analysis or discussion in my presentation because honestly I'm not sure about the conclusion that I can come up with here. So I decided to discuss it rather separately from the entire presentation. And I consulted a number of people who are financial experts who, you know, who are gurus, and we all had a problem in understanding exactly what was going on with regards to the budget for training. Because when you see there, the top row, which is appropriation, the appropriation is the money that the department comes with during budget presentation, as they are going to do next week on the 9th, and say, for training, this is what we're going to allocate. And that is the amount which has been appearing in the budget presentation. In 2006 or 2007, it was 780 million, it increased to 989, then 1 billion. But the audited expenditure shows that it's 807 that was utilized. In 2006 or 2007. Yeah, and 2007, 2008 it was 966. Then 2008, 2009, 1.1 billion. However,
billion.
Oh, sorry, it's billion. Billion. Audited expenditure, ENE, the last column. The last column is not million, it's billion.
Yeah.
Billion. 1.124 billion. Another you say. Yeah. Now, but when you come to the annual report, the annual report expenditure on training says something different. I don't know if you all have this, but I can just move around, try to show the members what I'm talking about. It is on page 191 of this document. And it says here, training and staff development, which falls under goods and services. And what you see here is that what was expended on training for for 2008-09, which is this annual report, is 29.3 million. Now, that raises questions as to where did the rest of the money go?
To the Caribbean.
Because, I mean, it's one thing to see the financial statements and say...
How much does it say?
23.9. Not, excuse me, sorry. 29.3 million. And previously it was 28.7. The entire row shows that what was actually expended in that particular year is not what they presented before Parliament, and also it's not what appears in the ENA. Now, I don't want to jump to conclusions and say this or that, because first, there's a perfect and clear explanation as to how this came about. But if you look at the annual report and you try to find the expenditure on training specifically, the only part that talks about training and development is the one that shows 29 million. And all those other millions are nowhere to be found. But I'm not sure, I'm not saying that is the case. Which is why I made this separate. So that members can ask these questions and ask for clarity when the department comes and then engage with the department. And before I conclude on this point, the other part that is rather adding more confusion, which somehow to support the suspicion is that the expenditure for training and development that appears here to be 29 million is under goods and services. And when it goes to goods and services under administration, money was wired, meaning money was shifted from that. The allocation of 4.8 billion and 234 million was shifted. I'm not sure where it was shifted, but it went to provinces, transfers and subsidies, and to other activities as well. You see, when you read this thing, it becomes more and more confusing. So that's why, in my analysis, I made a rather humble request or suggestion for the committee to consider a situation whereby, during the annual report presentation, we'll have a session where we focus on the performance part, the targets and all those things. Then we have another session where we engage with the department on the financial statement and try to get clarity on all this, because there's a lot that is not clear.
To satisfy myself, are you telling me that there's 1.1 billion unaccounted for anywhere?
Sal, through you, I'm not making that allegation, and I hate to be wrong, which is why I did not include this analysis in my presentation and had it separate, because I could be wrong. But when you look at it, it raises a number of questions, which is why I'm urging the members to hold the department to account when they come here on these issues. Except there's a proper explanation as to how things went about.
Yeah, so you say again, I see that all the journals people just walk in as well. Now, I mean, I don't want to drop this on them, but maybe they can just have a look at what Nkisi is saying while we're having this meeting and try and see whether they can give us, maybe there is a logical explanation. I would also hate us to go to the committee and then there is no issue. So let us just see, maybe they can just explain to us if they can have a look at what is there.
No, I think, Chair, I think I've been covered, because that was my concern. I mean, I think we must be very careful that we don't come into a meeting and even present things like this unless we've actually been able to get all the facts. And so I was going to say, I mean, this would have appeared in the Auditor General's report. So I think I agree with Annalise, but I'm really cautioning. Until we have actually all the facts, we must be careful that we don't create assertions that things have happened when we don't have all the facts. So I agree with Annalise.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, and I think we are lucky today to have the Auditor General with us whilst raising this issue, because as we have said, as members have said, they will be able to clarify for us. But really, I'm not the only one who looked at this thing. I looked at it, I discovered it, but then it raised questions to me. I also brought other people to have a look at it, still to continue to raise questions, which is why I flagged it separately and say, as I'm saying, I could be wrong. You know, in fact, I'm not claiming that this is the situation, but I'm just pointing something that raised an issue when I looked at it. And when you proceed, point number two on this, which is number of detectives, you see the table B, it says according to the SAPS information, the number of detectives into by March 2008, it was 21,000. Then the following March, it was 2009, it was 21,338. Oh my God. That's correct or not, but it shows a decrease. Then, by last year, November, it shows an increase of 23,022 infected. However, when you go to the ENE, page 499 of the ENE, you know, the ENE is that big, thick red book. Yeah. The vote, police. When you go there, page 499, table.
Is it 499 or 429?
Table 499 on, I mean, page 499, table 24B. It says, it shows the number of detectives. And along the MTF, it shows that starting from 2006, the number was 29,000, as shown there on the table here. Then it continues to grow, and also by 2009 November, because they say this information, according to the table there on the ENA, this information was supplied to Treasury by September 8, 2009. So already by November, according to Treasury, the department had 31,460 detectives. Whereas the information that is supplied in November of that year, it said it had 23,000 detectives. And I also recall that during its budget presentation, it said it will increase its number to 26,000. And reaching 30,000 is something that is still far-fetched at this current stage. So I don't know whether there's been a mix-up or what, or wrong figures were presented, or I'm not sure, I don't know. But still, this is another part that the department, I mean, the committee will have to raise to get certainty. So how many detectives do we have? And there's something that members should be careful for when you're being told that we have an X number of detectives. And that is, the detectives that we are concerned about are those who are carrying dockets, who are doing investigations, not the ones who are in the offices, who are managing. Because we find that people or person has grown within the department in that particular division to a level where it becomes a manager. But still, he maintains the status of being a detective because he's within the detective division. Like the Commissioner Ray Lala, for instance, has been a detective throughout. And in that position, he still maintains his status of being a detective. And when we count the number of detectives, it appears as the number, I mean, in the number of detectives, whereas he no longer carries the docket. So we may want to find the actual number of docket-carrying detectives in general detectives particularly, not in specialized units. In general, detectives who are at station level, the whole sum of them, the whole total of them. And then you will raise the issue about the figures appearing in the ENE and what they supplied to the committee not correlating. Here, then when you proceed to program visible policing, there, before we proceed, our members clear on this part.
Okay. You know, want to tell him? I think he shouldn't. He should do the presentation. Then we go to sleep. I mean, go to sleep. Because when you begin to want questions on each day's program, because then we complete the load. Let's get the presentation, then we go to sleep.
Thank you, Shafatan. We've indicated earlier that all programs receive a real positive increase, except for achieved a negative decrease of 1.7%. As a result, all its sub-programs also received a negative decrease. When we still on the issue of firemen, there's something also that came up here on the program 2, yeah. Program 2. It appears that in this annual report, 2008-09, huge sums of money were shifted from visible policy. And at that time, it was still the major and number one priority of the department, because the emphasis had not shifted as it has now. So that's another issue that the members would want to raise. So where does this money go? If it's allocated for this particular program and it has activities within it and budget for that, and then all of a sudden you shift it, that's where, why? What happens to those activities which are meant to be funded by this particular money, which has been allocated? But anyway, the department will have to explain on that. And you can see in the table that crime prevention, although it receives a decrease of negative one in real terms, it's not so much of a decrease. As I said, it will seek to maintain the baseline, and the activities of visible policing and crime prevention, all those activities will continue. And of course, the increase in personnel numbers will also ensure that certain number of new recruits goes into visible policy. However, as I said earlier, the emphasis is no longer on this visible, I mean on this program. It has shifted somewhat towards detective services. Right. Now let's come to detective services. And you can see the increases. Whilst we're still there on the increasing number of personnel, it's good that detectives will increase, and the committee has been asking for that for some time. But the increasing number of visible police officials at ground level or at station level, or who are doing patrols, the beats, some office, should not be viewed in the same manner as those who are in detectives, because raising the number of detectives also has or comes with a particular challenge. For instance, detectives need office space, they need to be in offices, they need cabinets, filing cabinets, they need desks and all those things. So, as opposed to increasing the number of people that are going to do patrol, the main things that you need for them are horses and vehicles to be out there where crime is taking place. But for detectives, as much as you need vehicles for them, you also need office space where they'll come in and write their dockets, the diary of a docket, of a deck. It's what you must concentrate on, whether before it goes to the prosecutor and when it comes back with instructions from the prosecutor. Whatever it is, you write on the diary. And that means office space to sit down and write. Now, there are many stations which do not have their detectives in their station precinct or station premises. They rent accommodation for detectives. For instance, SAPS Point in Devon rents accommodation. Greenwood Park rent, accommodation, and many others. So the increasing number of detectives will also have or will come with another burden of sourcing accommodation for detectives. Of course, that's a bridge that will be crossed when we get to it, but for now we do need an increase in the number of detectives. And I'm not saying the office space is going to be a major obstacle, but it's something that needs to be considered as well. But as I've said, the emphasis has shifted towards this program, which is detective. You can see that the budget supports that analysis. The amount of increase of the percentage in real terms is 8.5% compared to the previous one of 7.7%. And also, to ensure that the forensic bill is fully implemented or gets implemented, criminal record center as a sub-program has received a phenomenal increase of 49.8%. And likewise, forensic science laboratory received 33.6% increase. The specialized investigations, which is DPCI, that fourth sub-program at the bottom is the new one. It wasn't there before. It's where the DPCI is hosted. It received an increase of 3.7%. And we only hope and believe that the focus that we have now on detectives will ensure that crime detection increases and more suspects are apprehended, which in turn will work as a deterrent against criminals. We are almost there. Now, this part talks about crime intelligence, and you can see that there's a negative, there's a decrease, a real decrease of 4.8% compared to what even received last year, which was 15%. Now, this may raise certain questions as to if government wants to capacitate crime investigation by adding the crime intelligence aspect to it, because we believe that crime or intelligence-driven investigation produce more results. Why would now the allocation to that particular sub-program not support that vision? But overall, there is an increase in the intelligence and information management, which is another sub-program. But on that sub-program, perhaps the members will want to raise questions too. Is this in line with government's intention of intensifying and capacitating crime intelligence services to assist the crime detection, which is the emphasis on these new priorities, existing priorities, emphasis shifted? Then that's the final program, which is protection and security services. Again, here, there are things that are rather startling. And I've indicated this by putting in brackets what was allocated before in terms of increases, in terms of percentages. And we can see the VIP protection. In real terms, received this year 3.7%, whereas last year it had received 0.5%. Perhaps that could be as a result of the new ministers, new deputy ministers needing more VIP protection and the number of these people increasing. That could be the explanation, I'm not sure. But members would want to raise the question on that. And then, right, you have government security regulator, which is second last from the bottom, which previously received 15.6% real increase, and now it is negative 0.2. activities done in that program minimized, emphasis shifted, it's no longer a priority of, I mean, the thing is the allocation to this program fluctuates now and then, and it's not clear whether it is a result of shifting priorities or just poor budget planning.
Chair, if I may, just on, am I correct, the government security regulator, that is the security of government entity? What is that?
Government.
Everyone here going, okay, just define it, please. I think I'm right.
I think you think government
entities, courts, the protection, I mean, they're not, that's what I'm presuming they are. The protection of the courts, the protection of the government entities, buildings,
no.
Parliament, that sort of thing.
No.
I'm a bit confusing it with state tech and mobile security.
Yes,
and I don't want to lie to the committee, so maybe they'll have to come and explain. They'll have to come and explain. Well, Honourable Chairperson, members of Parliament, that is where I come to the end of the presentation, and thanks. Before we take questions, Chairperson, I'd like to contribute to the speaker for calls earlier.
Thank you. According to this government security regulator provides for security regulation, evaluation, and administration of national key points. And strategic installation.
The regulation body.
We're going to take the Auditor General's presentation so that when we open for questions, it's just questions only, and then we close after that. And I think in that way, members will catch a slide to change the chairman. And Western Cape and Gauteng, those will be versions like that. Yeah, I think that's a great thing.
You mean women, because ladies are going somewhere.
No, that's
not going to be last time. So we're going to have
that. And then we informed that the presentation by Auditor General is on ICT, not SAP, but we're going to take it together. And I'm requesting members to please pick their questions, clarity seeking questions. So when we ask questions, we'll be directed to both Auditor General. Thank you. And welcome, ma'am, and thank you for coming and your delegation as well. You're all welcome. And thank you for being here. You are ready for the
tea.
Chairperson, thanks. The document that I've just issued out is a detailed analysis of the budget. And it should not be confused with the one that I distributed previously in the other meeting. There was something different on the phone, I said something like that. This one is the analysis to the presentation that I've been making. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you and good morning to the committee. Today with me is Colin Mashabani, responsible and currently involved in the ICD audit. So he's one of our new managers there. When I looked at ICD, I similarly followed the same approach. So what was the findings in 2008-09? What is the risk that we've identified, and where should that filter into the budget, and where should it reflect? When we looked at 2008-09 and we saw the development that was approved, they only have three programs, of which the first is administration, and their responsibility is to surrender support to the line functions. There was a saving of 5.9%, and that was mainly due to vacancies. There were five vacant positions in the program, that was a 6.6% vacancy rate, and they planned and budgeted to relocate to a new building. Now, that didn't happen in 2008-09. To date, it still didn't happen. So that is still expenses still to come. Then on the complaints program too, there was an overspending, and the main reason that was provided, and it's also in the annual report, was that there was two salary increases for the SNS members. The normal salary increase in September, and then there was an additional salary increase in January 2009. This was a process together with DPSA to assess whether the senior management are in the correct salary level. I think what happened is at that stage, they thought they had enough money and they made the additional increase. And when March came, they overspent, and that actually resulted in unauthorized expenditure. And then they've also passed journals in relation to the subsidized vehicles to goods and services, and that should have been compensation. So there was an additional fee, additional cost allocated to compensation that they didn't budget it for, that they budgeted for, but they didn't, they weren't aware, and because they don't monitor properly, they overextend. On program three, the information program, there was a saving, an 8% saving. They had 7 vacant positions, and once again, the relocation to the new building that was resulted in the saving. As I said, the overrunning program too resulted in unauthorized expenditure. It was unauthorized expenditure in 2007-08 that still hasn't been approved. In 2008-09, it's now the additional 800,000. The explanation given at the time was that end of March there was a partial run, and then the salary expenditure went through, and they exceeded their budget. But budget should be monitored. Yeah. There should be a reconciliation process. So they should have known, end of March, we have a commitment of 800,000 to pay salaries.
Mm-hmm.
Our audit opinion, as previously communicated, it was a qualified opinion. The main reason was the assets. And it's because they couldn't provide us with sufficient, adequate, appropriate audit evidence to substantiate the adjustments, the disposals, additions of 5 million, as well as the opening balance of 14 million. As we said, it's the way they captured it on Logos. It was a transfer, but they would have calculated or recorded and disclosed it as an addition. And as a result, they overstated additions and the closing balance. And at that stage, they couldn't correct it because it once again was a matter of reconciling between what was actually transferred and what was real addition. Then 2019 and going forward, if you look at the estimates in the E&E, once again the three programs are compared between the budget of 19, the revised estimate. You can see in general there was a 1.3 to 1.5% increase between the original budget and the revised estimate. Then for 2010-11, there's a more substantial increase of Program 1 at 12% and Program 2 13%, and information Program 3 was a decrease of minus 2%. If you look at the programs and how they constitute in terms of the total budget, Program 1 is 38% and Program 2 49%. 49% where is the bulk of their activities investigating, following up where the activity should be. Program 1, what sits in there is the HR, internal audit, finance activities. They also have the employee wellness program that is in there, and the buildings. And that should explain why it's a bit higher and not just the support function. The reason provided was additional funded for compensation. That seems to be the main reason for the increase. Additional positions and then increase in salaries. Computer equipment. We also raised concerns in terms of the inappropriateness of the performance information system. So it might be that they're considering streamlining and getting equipment into the system and making sure that they can actually record information to go into the performance information and the strategic plan, annual plan. In general, the risk that is identified there, as I said, is the building that they plan to move into, but they haven't moved in yet. Inadequate budget monitoring, resulting in them incurring unauthorized expenditure. What I've also picked up is overtime that was paid of 1.2 million. Yes, 1.2, but worth that, there was also 1,186 days sick leave that was captured, and that is 731,000 rand. And there was an average of 6.217 vacancies. What I also picked up is that 66 of the staff members resigned during the year. So yes, it looks good at the end of the year to say there was only a 6.2 vacancy rate, but throughout the year, 66, and that's a huge percentage for them that resigned throughout the year. 42 of them, I think, realized that will move to other government departments. And then I've also seen that the local travel increased in 2008 with 28%. As I know in our audit, we raise concerns in terms of the processes, making sure that it's really effective, efficient, economical way that they, how they make use of travel arrangements and how they go about the controls, that there's insufficient controls to really monitor and approve the S&T claims that came through. And that's the main risk that that I've identified in terms of going forward. Any questions? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very, very much for this. And we will now take questions. The question goes to the ICT, we indicate that it goes to the ICT and goes to the BCC to clarify the same question. Let me take time. And then, Honorable Craig, Honorable Annie.
Yeah, to you, just on the ICD specifically, the I knew what you said about the management, the admin, that it also includes the wellness program, et cetera, but still surely the rules should apply of the 2664, I think, is the ideal division, and we're far above that. So we still have a problem like we had about 10 years ago of too much emphasis on admin and too little on where they actually need the money. And is it possible, can you maybe indicate just as what percentage of that is actually the wellness program, if possible?
Sorry, I mentioned...
I'm going to take...
I'm sorry.
Yes, we can just write down the question. Yes, another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to know that money that's allocated for the building, does that get rolled over, or do they have to re-budget for that every year? And the issue of the increase in local travel, why do you identify that as a risk factor? Is it not perhaps do you know the reasons why? Are they getting a lot more cases to investigate? Because, I mean, it might be a good thing that they're traveling more to investigate the cases, not that they have so many to investigate to.
And there was another presentation, don't forget.
No, thanks, Chair. I mean, I've partly been covered on this issue of the building, but did they give indications as to when they were moving into the building? Do we know if they have already moved into that building? Because that's obviously something that, if they haven't, that's going to be of a concern to us. But I want to go back to this previous presentation, if I may. And there was this one pager that was given out. And I also apologize for arriving late when I had to go to the physio. My apologies. On the issue of detectives, you've got your a footnote where you say that this, your information on the detectives comes from a reply to questions from the chairperson of the portfolio committee, and you give the date, etc. Now, I'm just going to find out, I mean, is that something that we've got, was it actual questions to the minister? What was it? Because you see, when one wants to go and use these figures, one wants to be quite sure of where these figures are coming from. So, sorry?
Yeah.
This is the question I'm asking, because the E&E may have figures, but I want to know where these figures come from, because I just want clarity on that. That's all I'm needing. Thanks, Jim.
Another question.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the first presentation, it seems as if detective has gone up, but the visible policing has gone down. What comes first? Is it the prevention oh, and then I have to do the crime and then detect. What does, how does it work according to your presentation? Because I understand that you say the detective has gone up and most of the things have shifted to the detective than visible policing. But I thought that the visible policing was the prevention part, so that the people will be afraid. If they see you coming as a police, then to go for a detection and detect thereafter when the thing has already been done, and so on and so forth. That's the first question, and I think Greg has covered me about the figures of the figures that one picture has given to us, because it looks very, very, very bad. But we just want to confirm it correctly. Lastly, on the ICD, Chairperson, on the ICD, the problem of overspending on salary, what does that mean? Does that mean that the financial officer don't know how many people they have in their pool to pay? What happened? If we are 10 of us here, then you as financial officer, you know that you are going to pay 10 people. How can you then overspend on those 10 people that you're supposed to pay for? And so on and so forth. I'm not looking at you. I'm asking the chairperson. She's intimidating me. Please, protection, Madam Chair.
You are protected. You must protect the little men on
I'm trying to get it. You see, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. If the organization can elaborate on that so that they will understand it clearly. How can you overspend when you know that you have got how many people and so on, and those people become with their benefits and so on? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
My question about the ICD could be linked to what the Honorable Ndlovu just asked now, and maybe could be part of the answer. The salary increases of the SMS members took place in September, and then 4 months later in January, the next year, there's another salary increase. What is the justification of raising salaries within 4 months? My second question has to do with the Criminal Record Center, the DMDC. I see the real percentage change is 49, when crime investigation is only 2%. Now, is this Crime Record Center not mainly administrative work? I mean, compared to what happens on the ground, because crime investigation takes place on the ground. And the Record Center gets such a high increase, I do not understand. Or am I mixing my head? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, the first part covered by Reverend Moses of 2 times increase initial years.
Mm.
The other part is who determines the increase and with how much in the station or in this portfolio committee of us, because some of us are fairly new. So who determines who gets increased and with how much?
Thank you, Chief President. Just a question for clarity from DC. The increase in management on Budget Vote 24, the program administration, salary increase, which management are we talking about? Are we talking here about the total management of SAPS, with other words, in the provinces as well, or are we talking about senior management at national level. I mean, I think it's important to for us to try and find out what we are talking about. You gave a figure of 47.8 million for the previous year, and then for 2010-11 it goes up to 54.3 million, and it's a 13% increase. It's actually, if you look at the program administration, it's the second highest increase in that whole program. And the reason why I'm asking this question, Chair, is just I think at some point in time we need to start tracking the increases that we as Parliament say must go to police on the ground, whether it's reaching police on the ground, and whether it's, there's not a skewed allocation to management and it's not reaching police on the ground. I mean, I was shocked when I heard what the constables are getting while they're training.
You mean compared to the person who's sitting in the office?
Mm.
Oh, now I understand.
Thanks, Chairperson. About the government security regulator, he said here that government buildings, it involves government buildings, etc. Now, I was always under the impression that government buildings are guarded by security officers. So I am exactly get confused that why is their budget in some. Same goes for rail police. I need some clarity. Are they sub members? Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take responses. We decided to who wanted to come first amongst yourself, you know.
I'm gonna have long and winding answers.
Good that you know it, sir.
Thank you. In terms of the first question, where program 1 is 38% of the total budget, I think that was one of my concerns as well, to say, well, if you look at support, it shouldn't be the bulk of the budget. It is not 50%. And when I mentioned EWP, it's not to say that that is one of the major expenses in program 1, but that is what is filtered into program 1. I think we can give you a detailed breakdown. I mean, we can provide that to say what is the percentage. But if I can look at it, buildings should really make a huge percentage of that 38%. So that is just that if you want, we'll send you the breakdown. Then, in terms of the second question, the building, the rollover, and they budgeted in 2008-09. If I now remember correctly, they were supposed to move, and then something happened, and they couldn't move to the first building. So they started looking for a second building. So at this stage, they've identified the second building, but no contract has been signed, so there isn't a commitment at this stage. They can request for rollovers if there is a commitment. So in my view, they couldn't have requested for, or they didn't apply for rollovers because they didn't have the signed contract. And they will have to include that in the budget then. If I can just get a nod or a sorry, comment here back. It says like this. Okay, thanks. So yes, now rollover, they will have to provide for it in the budget. Then the traveling, yes, it's not a bad thing that they travel more. Some of the explanations is that they do it to catch up on the backlog. So it is good. All that I'm saying is as part of the audit, we've identified that they can do it smarter. And we did raise it with the then EB, our weaknesses that we've identified. So overspending on salaries, how does it happen? I fully agree. I mean, if you know what your salary is month after month, you should make provision and you should know that it's going through. If it's due in March, it should go through in March. What happens with the PASL, it goes into a suspense account. So it doesn't, it's not an expense immediately. And usually that expense will only reflect in the next month. The only thing that I can think is that they worked on the assumption that that salary will only become an expense in April.
Hmm?
And it's because they didn't do proper monitoring.
I think the answer is the last.
Yeah. They just didn't monitor, and they didn't keep that fund aside to say, well, there's a possible and there should be a salary that we have to pay of 800,000. They should have expected that. The salary of the senior manager SNA, the DPHA determines salary increases, and the normal increase for all government employees was in September. So that is where everybody got, including the SMS. But as part of ICD's challenge is the SMS. I mean, if you look at 66 people that resigned, 42 of them moving to other departments, it's because of salaries. So they had a process together with DPSA where they assessed on what level the senior management should be remunerated on. So it's not something that they decided on their own.
Okay.
It is in consultation and with the approval of DPSA. So after that, there should have been a recommendation to say, well, these people can be or should be remunerated on this level. If you have budget, then you can pay them the additional increase. And because they didn't monitor, they thought there were money available, and they went ahead and they implemented the additional increase. It's
an approved
process
with DPSA. Can we have the same review? Mm-hmm. Can we also have a second review? Mm-hmm.
So did I leave anything
else
for ICD?
Did I cover
everything?
They checked. My neighbor here is saying that we must all retire and go to
ICD. I just want to check. Risk identified, risk number two, the adequate budget monitoring resulted in ICD in carrying an authorized assessment, but maybe inadequate budget monitoring. And risk number three, that of June 2008, when ICD paid 1.2 million as overtime. Yet, they had so many sick leaves, so many vacancies, and so many resignations.
For the budget monitoring, it's just a fact, if you don't monitor your budget on a month-to-month basis, you are going to overthink. Departments work on date of payment is date of charge. So at this stage, it's possible for them not to overspend their budget. And they should just have processes in place to make sure that they don't incur an authorized expenditure. Because to get that condoned is a long process whereby Treasury comes involved, make an assessment, make a recommendation to SCOPA, make a recommendation to the Parliament, and then it can be approved with or without funding. So if Parliament approves without funding, then it means ICD must carry that cost in their available budget, so they won't get additional funds. So it's just a weakness in terms of how they do financial management. Then overtime, I mean, it shouldn't be the norm to pay overtime. And with the vacancies, it could mean that, well, they're understaffed and that these people are working for two people, and they should look in more recruiting and more aggressive recruitment. They should look at their establishment and have a proper study to see, do they really have the right establishment to execute their mandate. 1.2 is quite a significant amount. I know at one stage the CFO contacted me and said, well, should we pay the overtime? And I said, well, if people work, you have to remunerate them for the time that they spend. That they work overtime. You have to work within the law. But at the same time, make sure that staff just don't book overtime and say, well, we've worked this overtime and claim this money as an extra remuneration. So once again, for me, the overtime should be properly monitored, controlled with overtime contracts, with a review by a supervisor to sign off and say, yes, this time was actually worked. And if it's really a need to pay 1.2 million rand on overtime, then something is wrong with the establishment. Then we need more people, or they need to to do a study to see what is our real establishment need.
I'm thinking that sometimes you say Cindy has worked 100 hours overtime, and what could actually mean is that she's worked day and night. I'm just taking an example, day and night, 365 days overtime and normal time. I'm just saying that because we think this is too much. And some way you'll expect somebody to do the actual calculation to say, is this really real? Even if they are short-staffed, even if they have worked overtime, but is it possible that one person can get so much overtime, and what does it mean about that person? Does it mean that he works Monday to Monday, day and night, and so on, work for the day, get the day's pay, work for the in the evening, there's the evening pay, always is out, and so on and so forth? I think some way these things need to be investigated so that we know exactly as to how does it happen that for an institution such as ICT, you can have such huge overtime paid and allocated. I'm just saying that probably you can go to details of it.
On the same point, Chairperson, is it possible to get the breakdown of how they come to the figure? Because that would indicate how many hours overtime an individual has worked. So if we can get a breakdown of how they come to the figure, that would be helpful. Okay.
Chairperson, if you would allow me, I don't want to ask questions. I just want to share information, especially with new members and Honourable Chaser raising the question about travel. Actually, raised that issue in my mind, and I know Honourable Ndlovu and Evelyn Nation might be able to assist in this. I think there are issues that have been raised previously that we need to put in context in order to also understand the question about the travel concern. There was a time in the ICD's history where this Parliament actually requested, this committee actually requested the Auditor General's office to do a audit of the travelling of the ICD, because it was clear that there were serious irregularities around it.
Yeah.
You, for instance, would have vehicles, if we started analysing it, from the Western Cape travelling through the Worcester toll rate like 4 or 5 times a day, which just wasn't possible to happen. So that is why I think it still remains a concern, the travel issue. Then as a result of that, one of the things that was as a result of that was the opening of the satellite offices so that they could be widespread, etc., and that they don't have to travel that far, and you don't have to have these huge increases in travel arrangements. I just want to alert, and I think the question that we need to ask when we see them here is, what is the outcome of this increase? Are they now handling more cases? And are they finalising more cases? Because if that's the case, yes, then true, then we can say that 28% is valuable. The second issue, Chairperson, is on the issue of the two increases. 3 years ago, Governor Law, I can't remember, or might be 4 years ago, this committee had a meeting at the airport with the ICD. Dan, you weren't there because it was a Friday, I remember. No, she wasn't there because it was a Friday. She wasn't there because you travelled. It was something that was at a very late notice. Where we sat with them and we said to them that you guys need to speak to the DSA to get your salaries on par with the rest of the public service. And where we, in fact, it's a pity it took so long for them to get to this point, but at least they are there now. Then also at that same point, and I think that's something we need to ask them, it's the issue that you raised about overtime. We also said to them, because they complain about not having enough people, establishment not being enough, big enough, etc., etc. We said to them then at that point as well, you've got to go into an exercise again with DPSA and evaluate what should be your ideal establishment. Now, I don't know how far that process has gone. You remember we said to them, you've got to go to them, you've got to sit down, there's got to be evaluation of what is the work that you need to be done, that needs to be done, and how many people do you need in order to do this work properly, so that once and for all we all can know what is the ideal establishment of the ICD.
So that I think would be an interesting answer to get back from them as well, as how far are they with that process. Then the last issue, Jefferson, on again your question about the overtime, and listen to this again.
Can I just analyze on that to help the auditor's office, because you recall that immediately after that there was a report that was placed in the house, which was rejecting what the ICD was reporting about, was on the traveling and the expenditure and the composition of the staff themselves. I recall that it made an outburst to the other members. They didn't understand what was going on, but we really understood what was going on because we have already spoken to them about it, and they didn't implement it and so on. I'm trying to back analysis on that because that it is a crucial thing when it comes to overtime, and especially when it comes to 1.2 billion, it's a lot of money.
Media. I'm Guza.
Not want to be part of the relationship between honorable but I mean collegial relationship. But at least honorable
Friday,
okay. I just have to be very rude and excuse myself. I'm afraid we've got a congress tomorrow and I have to go get the bus, so I'm sorry.
What are you voting for? Sorry, and the last issue on that is a 2005 parliamentary report, and it might be good for committee members to get copies of that report. If we could ask Jeremy to make copies available of that 2005 report. Chair, we went to an extent as Honourable Law was saying, we went to an extent where we said that we not just want Parliament to adopt notice the report, we want to debate the report. And the report was in the end adopted by Parliament. So I think for that reason it's important that the committee also have sight of that report. See, the last issue is the issue of vacancies. It's always been an issue with the ICD in terms of they complain about not having enough staff, but they don't fill their positions. Class 22. Now you're not filling your positions, so you pay due to overtime because some people have got to do more work than others. So I think it would also be interesting for us to find out how long does it take them now to fill a vacant position, because previously it was like 6, 7, 8, 9 months, sometimes longer than that. And then the policing powers was also a problem in terms of it does not get them signed off. By the time that signed off, the guy has left because he couldn't wait for them to employ him, et cetera, et cetera. So it might be just interesting. I'm just sharing that, Jefferson, specifically because I think it would empower all of us a bit more in terms of putting these things in perspective.
Maybe if I just I've seen in the annual report this morning, it takes an average of, they set a target of 3 months, and according to this, they say they've achieved the 3 months. But obviously, we had a problem confirming the performance information.
Yeah, because they don't keep
it. Thanks, Jefferson. The first question, where did the speaker come from? Members will see that among the documents, many documents that have been given to them today, there is the one that looks like this, which reads progress reports, priorities of the 2019 information address, the email from Mr. Basic directed to Commissioner Standard on January 2010 has bearing on this matter. The replies to his question as follows. So I asked the question on behalf of the committee and on behalf of the Justice Department, and then they give those the replies. The information therein is utilized for members' interest in the analysis of whatever it is, where there are issues that need updated information, such as the strength of the detectives and it's like. So the information comes directly from them. The one that has figured about the detective honorable flag is not this one. But I'm saying it's similar to this, where it's another document, a separate document. Yeah, it's a similar document in the manner that I asked the question to the department. The department responded, and it's in this way. It's another. It's a separate document, not this one. But I'm just saying it looks like this.
I
was under the impression that Jeremy distributed it because I got it from him as well.
Depending on which document you're talking about, I think that's not distributed, but there's no harm in distributing it again.
What comes first? Detection or investigation? Interesting question. Very important. Prevention obviously comes first. And as I said, the budget does not take away the prevention part or aspect of the department. It's still a priority. However, more emphasis now is on detection of crime because of the scale of the trio crimes. Let me explain. The trio crimes have been going on and have been continuing over the time, but more focus has not been on them. We've been focusing on prevention and trying to fight or cut down the high contact crimes such as murder, rape, robbery, assault, and the like. The approach towards addressing those crimes needs to be slightly different from addressing the trail crimes. I'll explain. Contact crimes, usually they say are crimes between two people. Of course, there could be more, like rape two people, but also there could be more individuals or suspects, gang rape. Murder, one people, or I mean two persons, but it could be more. Many people killing one person or killing each other. The approach towards the assault as well. Assault is one-on-one mostly, but it can happen that you find a group of people doing that. One of the things that assists in cutting down high contact crimes, particularly assault TBH, which is very high, because most of those crimes take place in places where people are. Places of entertainment, having fun, drinking, sometimes in illegal spots or in illegal shipping. So, through crime prevention measures, police can go there, close down the shipping, you know, and their visibility in that area will, reduce the level of those high contact crimes. But when it comes to trio crimes, it's very unlikely. It does happen, but it's very unlikely to find one person committing house robbery by himself. It can happen, but it's unlikely. What you find are syndicates, people, the groups of people doing these things. They do hijacking. One person can hijack, but you find that in most cases they work as a group. And to prevent that from happening is unlikely because they sit and plan. They know the target, they know where they're going to go. And you find that a group that operates, for instance, in Seapoint is a different group to the one that is operating in, Clermont, Plumstead, or wherever. Now, but you find that these groups, these syndicates, know each other. But they also know their designated areas where they operate. And they will know the methods and the modus operandi that they use. And you can see, and one can tell that such and such work, because of this and this and that, indicates that it was committed by this group, because this is the method that they use. So they know each other. Now, to prevent that is very difficult. You need directed investigation. As the department has said, it will be going to have specialized units focusing on this. Hence, the budget to support that. So, if you can find one member of a syndicate, surely he will be able to give you or lead you to other members of that particular syndicate. And one syndicate down will bring down to a certain extent the level of the true crime. It has been proven in helping in some of the analysis that I've read how they've targeted the true crime, and they want to spread that approach throughout the country. And also, if one syndicate focusing on true crime is down, it will be easier for those members of this particular syndicate to lead you to other. It's where you begin to recruit them as your informants. To say, because well, once you arrested the person, and perhaps the person is out on bail, and something happens which is in the line of the true crime, you go to the person that you've arrested and say, you've done this again, I'm taking you in, violated your bail. Then the person will steal and say, no, not me, then lead me to the ones that you did this whole thing. Because they know each other, they know even the way they operate, and therefore it becomes easier to focus on them and target them in that way. So that's why I'm saying the emphasis now is on fighting these crimes by these methods, but still, crime prevention and visible policing is still the priority.
Excuse me, because he knows. I think he should have stopped with when he said this is an interesting and a very difficult question and it needs discussion. Because I don't think you can divorce the one from the other. I don't think you can say that detection plays a lesser role in fighting crime than visible policing. In fact, you don't think so either, because your document on the State of the Nation debate argues a different point on this issue. The fact of the matter is, if criminals know they are going to commit a crime, but they're not going to get caught, they will continue to do so. So part of crime prevention is successful crime detection. And part of crime detection, and that is part of the success of the fight against the true crime specifically, is very good crime intelligence. And that is the success in Gauteng. The success in Gauteng is crime intelligence, and it's crime intelligence being taken seriously. Maybe this is an interesting discussion for the committee whenever we have the time. For us as a committee, without playing for media or whatever, or even with the management around, just to discuss these issues ourselves at some point and debate them, what we believe, because I think it informs also our approach to what should be the priorities, especially in terms of Diana, that raised the issue about how different things are going to work from now on in terms of the budget. If we don't answer these questions from an informed point of view and from discussing and debating it with each other, we're not going to be able to say how we think the budget should look in future either. And I just think we need to. And can I make it a question? It would also be very interesting. I would appreciate that at least. If the researcher, when he comes across interesting material that he's read in preparing these documents for us, to alert members about those articles and things so that we can also read them and get informed better in terms of that. It would really, I would really appreciate that, something like that.
Thanks, Jefferson. And Honorable Van Veek has just explained my point quite clearly, and in fact, we can't divorce the two. But the argument in the analysis still remains that now the emphasis is more towards crime detection. However, it's not taking away from visible policing, because visible policing is still a priority.
Sure.
But now, in order to address this particular problem of true crime, which is widespread, you need specific strategy which will unfolded by means of crime detection. And as has been said, more the criminals get to know that their chances of being caught are increasing, and they will be less likely to commit crime. So it works as a deterrent. 49% increase for criminal record centers.
Maybe just before you move to that question, from what you've just said, the 4 to 7% decrease.
I mean,
the emphasis now you're saying is on detection because of the trio crimes and so on and so forth. You want to believe that the intelligence will come into the picture there and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, from 7 to 10% down to 4 to 7%, in your own view, is it correct to that? And the argument raised, when 7 to 10% was decided, I was actually reading the previous annual report. It motivates the 7 to 10% target, and now 4 to 7%. Do you think that the argument is really worth that target?
May I? Let's start by saying I want to believe that the people who looked at this matter and came up with the target of 7 to 10% did a thorough job, and that decision was well informed, and they set the target that was not so unreasonable, and I never had the department complaining until very late, when it became very obvious that it was not being able to achieve the target, and started complaining. But also, what is the point of having a target? A lowly set target will not stretch you that much. So in order for us to see the department working hard and trying to achieve the target should be set rather high. And to reduce it down to 4 to 7, I don't think it's going to stretch them that much, because already they are within that range. It's what they achieve. When you look at the crime statistics, where there has been a decrease, the decrease has been within that range anyway. So if they continue with the way they're doing right now, they'll be able to achieve exactly that, because it's always been the case. Whether we put more money or more officials, it's what they've been achieving. So I don't think this target will go and stretch them that far. But as I said in the analysis, that I think in managing crime perceptions, people's crime perceptions, it will work a long way, because the government will argue that, look at the characteristics, we are achieving, yet the target is low. But yeah, for now, let's end this thing.
That means that for the nub of the question, not from BC, but for the management, is that who set the target? For what purpose? If you're for 10 kids, then you budget for 10 kids, and you...
Or 20.
Don't intimidate.
Then, I wasn't referring to that.
And then everything you've done for 10 kids. And then you come next day, you say, no, I think I will budget for 7 kids. When you already know that you can achieve 10, then you reduce it. Then who does that? Who really comes to that figure? Oh, in other words, they don't want to do anything else except what they are doing now, to improve. But the figures of the human resource is improving every now and then. And the president just talked about 10%, and they will tell us how they are going to implement 10%. But when it comes to targets, it's going down. You understand what I'm trying to say? It's not I'm not asking this, but I'm asking the chair and ask here that who really said that this side is going up But what we are going to, what we are going to achieve at the end, the actual output at the end, is going down. Therefore, we will be seen as a good people who are doing a good job. At the end of the day, we are doing one and the same thing every day. That's my answer.
I couldn't have said it better. The, as I've said, the shift has moved towards crime detection, and to capacitate that program, Criminal Record Center is also important. They do the analysis of exhibits, including fired rounds, bullets, projectiles. I'm not sure if the Honorable Governor was with us in Pretoria at the lab.
Oh.
Yeah, it is not only administration, but they actually deal with the forensic analysis of many things, ranging from firearms to documents, forged documents, the whole lot. So if you're increasing the number of detectives and capacitating the people who will be doing the investigation, once they get the exhibit, they'll have to be analyzed in the lab. So the increase in such has to correlate the increase in other sub problems within this problem. That's how I understand it. And besides, there's been serious backlog, and this amount of money pumped into this sub problem will work towards reducing those backlogs and actually trying to achieve efficiency. Management is huge amount going to management. One of the secretariat, the budget secretariat, which is around 21 million for this current financial year, also comes from sub-program management. But as to what is this, that is within program management, I will be lying. As to what activities and what it pays and who it pays, I'm not sure in great detail. But I know that in corporate services is where you find training. And corporate services also pays medical aid and other stuff, hence it's a huge allocation. But probably it's an interesting question to raise to the Department of Service. So what is it exactly that happens within sub-program management? What do you do in sub-program management? Government security regulator. I think that was my final question as to whether police officials do secure government buildings. If I got it correctly from Honorable Mulibati. Well, they do. Not all of them. The crucial or important ones like Parliament, the new buildings, and the like. I think, on that note, I think that's the end of the questions that came towards me. And thanks,
Jefferson. I think he is not finished, because Malabazi asked about another company. If he said that there are areas where there are security companies, there are areas where there are police and so on. There she comes in.
But I think she's
Honorable Malibat, we are trying to answer your question on the government security regulator. And
Honorable Dutlopo remembered it on your behalf.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Baba.
Please, official. Perhaps those that are looking after government property, it will be determined by the level of importance of that particular government property or department I'm not sure. I don't know. But also, it's an interesting question to raise to the department as to which ones are guarded by police officials and which ones are left to private security companies. And on what basis do they make a determination? So, thanks, Chair.
Rail police.
Yes, they are rail police, and they are in the railway environment, and that's where they operate.
Thank you.
In the trains.
Question was, is this yes or what?
You said no. Can I make a point? Just to say, the question was, are they SAPS members?
Are they SAPS members?
The answer is yes, they are SAPS members who are specifically dedicated to the railway environment, and they are patrolling inside the trains and train stations. As to whether they are enough and they cover all the places and all the areas and which hours of the day they work, I'm not sure. Because we find that, like here in Cape Town, they say after 7 p.m. it's not safe to take the train because of the criminal activity that go inside the train. And whether they do have the police here in Cape Town in their train, I'm not sure. But of course, I mean, concerns have been raised before that the operations of these police officials are not adequate, because criminal activities still do take place within the railway environment where they are supposed to, where these police officials are supposed to be. Then,
can I try and help you on that one as well? I think it's something that started before you was came to Parliament. It started with the Western Cape.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was an acknowledgement by government that it was a mistake to close down the previous rail police. You would remember under transport, there was actually rail police.
Mm.
They wore a different uniform. I think their uniforms were black, if I remember correctly.
Green.
Or green.
Mm.
And they were actually doing that. And then at some point we suggested to them that why don't we talk to transport and have such members when they are on their way to work, if they wear their uniform, because in itself it should be a deterrent for crime, that they can travel for free on public transport. You know, just as a presence on your public transport systems. And then after that they started with the pilot project in the Western Cape. And then they're now busy, and I think that's the increase as well, is the rollout to other provinces. We can just maybe ask also how far they are with that rollout. And, yeah.
On the issue of the separate discussion that we had, Honorable Van Wyk suggested that perhaps Auditor General may assist us in unpacking this issue. I'm not sure if they are ready I don't know. But I just wanted to remind the Honourable Secretary about that suggestion.
Thanks, Jack. This is very little information to make an assessment. All that I know at this stage is we express an opinion on the audited expenditure and the financial statement. I will have to go back, and if I can by Monday send you a response through Jeremy, just to, because there should be a logic explanation for the difference. By Monday I'll send it back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable in our last interaction with the provincial commissioner, you are talking about horses, vehicles and horses. If I heard you correctly earlier on, you mentioned the word horses.
Mm.
In our previous interaction with the provincial
Yes, thanks, Jefferson. They call it biological assets. It includes dogs and horses. And for now, I know only of dogs and horses. The dogs are used by the dog unit for patrols, sniffer dogs. And also we have horses for patrols. They call it mounted services. They call it mounted services. So yeah, it does. But it also has a budget. I think this is 1.1 billion because they need to buy the dogs and buy the horses and get rid of them after a while. So yes, there are horses and dogs.
1.1 billion.
It's what was the EME? I think it is up to 1.1 billion this year. The building expenditure next to it, building services, and then.
Where's my
cutting?
It must be faded with that.
But they could keep the loan. No, they could keep the loan short.
Biological asset. I think it's 1.1 million.
Yeah,
also. It couldn't be so much. Would it cost so much to buy a dog? Anyway.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think you have exhausted all questions that have been responded to, but we also have asked all our questions. I just want to remind them that we indeed have received this very thick document, as thick as the EMP, because it's page this side and that side. If you were to make an environment, it would be the EMP. I think it came on the second, because we had given them the second of whatever date, but they could not make the date. They wrote a letter requesting an extension, so we gave them the 2nd of March. And indeed, they have responded to some of the questions. I've not read this document, but I'm requesting members to please read the document, because it is responding to some of the questions that we asked when we in Pretoria. There is also another document. I'm not sure whether I brought the document here, which I think is was referring to, which was also responding to our questions. I think it will be important that as we prepare for Tuesday, we use also their documents, and we're able to, on the basis of the responses that are in those documents, go to the documents that they've presented to National Treasury, ENE, and so on and so forth, and also the very annual report. It will be important. As we prepare for Tuesday. So our meeting on Tuesday will start at 9:30. We'll start at 9:30. And indeed it will be engagement. Of course, that we met the department in Pretoria, it assisted us in a great way, because some of the things we are aware of, but indeed we still have to be rigorous as we interact with the department. I want to thank UBC for the work that is prepared for the portfolio committee so that we can engage the department on Monday. But still, I want to thank the Secretary General's office and the representatives that are here for always being there for us when we ask help from them. This one is for Auditor General, and this is their presentation for the SAP, I think, last week. So we have all these documents. Presentation by unions, of course, Auditor General, National Treasury, we have this information. And the reasons why we have those presentations is to prepare us for engaging the department on Tuesday. And I think we are armed now. All that we have to do is to go back to our places and sit down, do our work, ask questions, read this document, formulate.
formulate follow-up questions on them, get if there's any contradiction between what is here and what is in the documents that are there, as read by some of the issues by this. I really want to thank you very, very much for members for coming to the meeting. And I'm about to close the meeting, but I'm seeing some indicators that some people want to say something.
Chair, it's not about this. It's about the program of next week. May I say something about I was trying to communicate with Craig to find out exactly, or for him to find out exactly what is going on. Because if the House is not sitting on Thursday, Thursday afternoon, then we can do the work that we're supposed to do on Friday on Thursday afternoon. And then we, who are the migrant workers, can be able to see a bigger person. Why Chairperson today? I'm in a very, very bad awkward. It's a ladies' day, and all ladies are jumping on me. I was thinking, therefore, Chairperson, my proposal is that when if Greg can get the confirmation as a week and find out if there is no sitting on Thursday. As far as I know, that's what I had.
Yeah.
But if there is no sitting whatsoever on Thursday afternoon, can we do this item then, which is a Friday item, on Thursday, so that we are able to catch the last flight on Thursday afternoon? Immediately after lunch, if it will be 14 hours, then we meet, and then after one and a half hours, and then we catch the last flight. Oh, I'm just proposing if that is possible.
Agreed. Just want to ask for clarity on what Honorable Doug is saying, whether talking about something that is upcoming next Thursday or every Thursday.
No. Only next week. Only next week.
Okay. Because it does make depend. Like in my case right now, yesterday I was working flat out until half past 11 in the evening.
You're working?
No. Finishing. So. Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's audible. You're right.
I mean, Thursday is. On Friday next week, we'll be adopting NEM.
Yeah.
We have. I think a number of sets of needs that we have to adopt.
Yes.
We will indeed consider what the members are saying. I can't say yes or no right now because I don't know as to why there's no sitting and if there are any activities that are scheduled for this time. But indeed, if there is nothing, we will try to move that time because it's us. It's not like we've invited somebody from outside to come and make. Isn't it? It's minutes, isn't it, Mr. Andrew?
Yes.
It's minutes. Yes. So it's ourselves. So we can change that. I will indeed check and see if it is not possible. It will be if and only if it's not possible. Maybe some parties have some engagement, but otherwise we try to move the meeting to Thursday. We will find it. But it is important that we meet and we adopt the minutes because we've not done so for quite some time.
Understand.
Thank you very much, members. We will meet on Monday on Tuesday at 9:30. Thank you very much, the little bit.
Thanks, Noreen.
Eventually. Are you leaving your phone yet?
the ground.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
And one of the my chief whip as well. I have got an agreement. I don't feel well, I'll get him on Congo. How did I feel okay? Okay. And I've also got an agreement, and I'm not going to try any stupid things. I'm trying to be a hero. So far, I felt okay. But don't feel all right.
Look, I quickly went through this thing document that you
feel
must read. Very interesting. They don't have any contractors, they have service providers, and nobody works with this department. There are four people. I think it's actually not on Global Day today, it's not Women's Day.
I really don't know. Let me just leave.
You didn't forget before I'm being chucked out of this office.
Debo, are you bringing those minutes, the agenda? Okay, because the chairperson's about to leave you, and I just wanted to check it before she goes. Are you on your way?
To CTICC? No, I'm not. I'm working this weekend, so I'm the people.
Yeah, you're going to have to run, eh?
Yes.
Okay.
Enjoy it.
I hope so. It's not going to get
The t-shirt that they gave us yesterday, isn't that good?
No, it's bad.
And they said on the news this morning they gave us Bafana t-shirt.
It's not
Bafana.
I also have one of those.
This is an old one, eh?
Yeah, I've also got one. I had mine on last week.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from...
2004.
Yeah. When we qualified for the World Cup.
No, when we bid for the previous World Cup in 2004.
No, this shirt's older than that.
No, I've got one exactly. You know what?
I bought this.
No, but what I'm saying, when we bid for the previous World Cup, not the one that we didn't get.
Okay.
It was, they, you remember, we could buy them at the store.
You know when I bought this shirt?
Oh.
Let me tell you when I bought this shirt. I bought this shirt in, some country it was, about 1996. I remember I wore this shirt to the FNB Stadium when we played Ghana, qualification match for the World Cup.
But can you remember 2000?
Yeah, I have hardly used it, but now I can wear it because I've lost weight.
Correct, 1999.
Yeah.
Can you remember that we bid for the 2006 World Cup?
Yeah.
And then they sold these to the sport.
Okay. This used to be the one of the jerseys.
Yes. And some of us got, and that I had mine on yesterday, and we wore them in Parliament. The day that soccer guys were here.
I remember that.
You remember?
I remember that. But I never had one of them. We weren't given these.
No, we had to buy them from the Department of School.
Did you
Which one? I started going through it now. While we were sitting here. And you saw that the one about the forensics. they said they don't have anybody that came from South. There's four names there that they've given us. Now I wonder how many more are there that they don't give us. And it would also be interesting, you see, again now, but now from this document, we can now ask questions for a written reply. But after we resolve the issue on Tuesday, I think we must tell them we're not going to get decent answers. Don't expect any questions from us. Now, I started going through it now. It's very interesting. And I said to Comrade Greg, he must actually have a look at the one with Central for one, because he had that meeting with these guys.
Yeah.
So
I'm
he's
reading
got
this.
Yeah.
And
so
I'm
he's got
to make some calls.
Yeah. So you can actually, you remember he told us at the management meeting the other day that he met with the guys, Guy Data guys, and they talked about 10111. Now, if you just look at the figures that they give there in terms of staff,
yeah,
it's a lie already. I mean, I'm so up to here with them lying to us. And then we expect it to keep quiet.
I'm just waiting for Lebo to bring the agenda.
Oh, yeah.
Just check if it comes to your mind.
It'd be nice to have time to debate some of these issues in the committee. We will have to make time for some of these things, philosophical debates about issues, so that we can also determine our own thinking around stuff.